You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Diaz sends one high and deep to left field. Badu near the out-of-town scoreboard. This ball's gone! Grand slam! Alembis Diaz! Into the first row of the Crawford boxes. And the Astros score four with one swing.
It was a fun week for Astros fans, weekend especially. First time in 35 years, the Astros swept a seven-game homestand, and it was the first time ever at Minute Maid Park. It's a stat, Paul, that kind of sounds a little bit unbelievable.
Yeah, it does, but I guess it's a thing. I guess it's true. And, hey, this was a homestand where the pitching just mowed everybody down. Three shutouts, two runs or less in all seven games of this. The Astros pitching has been out of this world this year. And considering there's no Lance McCullers and there's no Brent Strom, their former pitching coach, now that he's in Arizona, it's really surprising. Will it last? I hope so. Is there another cause of it? Is this maybe baseball deadening the balls again without telling us? Perhaps that's a part of it. Ooh. Whatever the case, I'm enjoying what this pitching staff has been able to do. They are the reason that the Astros are in the spot that they're at right now.
Jake Odorizzi delivering his third consecutive solid start. He threw five innings and allowed just one hit. Of course, Christian Javier piggybacked him, and then Hector Neris. I mean, there's been a lot of great acquisitions by this Astros team, and the pitching has been a pleasant surprise. Justin Verlander coming back was a pleasant surprise in and of itself, but the fact that they've been able to deliver consistently and lift up this team when the bats have been slow has been a great surprise as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the bats, you know, I took a look, Vanessa, yesterday after the game in my old man ways, you know, 33 years old. Just kidding.
Oh, I geriatric.
I know. Some people get mad when you even make that comment. And I know that when I've heard you make the comment, like, oh my God, I'm slightly over a quarter of a century old. It's all downhill. I'm like,
never
goes
over well with people.
This is how I sounded a couple of years ago. So listen, at least I'm self-aware of it. But my old man baseball tendencies, look at the Astros lineup and get annoyed by the fact that there's not one guy batting over 275. To me, it's annoying.
Right.
Like, they don't even have one guy batting 300. And in years past, I would expect there to be two or three. And I know that the sport has gone away from the contact hitters who are hitting plus 300. It's all about, hey, what's your OPS? What are you able to do as far as slugging? It's really become a sport that's more about that. But, you know, it is interesting to note that this team has had, from a lineup perspective, the issues that it's had. And I think we saw a back and forth between a couple of our 97.5 guys, between Jeremy Branham, between I think Noah Fouts as well, about Yuli Gurriel being below the Mendoza line at this point. And there's a lot of guys on this Astros team that have to be hitting better. Luckily, the pitching has carried them, but there's a very big part of me, Vanessa, that feels like at some point the pitching will come back to earth. I hope that the bats will wake up just relative to where they have been, and over this home stretch, they are fortunate that they had the kind of pitching backing them up that they did.
Dusty Baker praising the pitching, saying pitching is the name of the game. Guys are going deep into games. Our bullpen wasn't stretched out too badly these last seven games. It sounds obvious, but I do think that's an important point to make, right? The bullpen is able to finish strong when the pitchers are able to go four or five innings. And I think that that's helped with the load management or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Of the squad. It was Mother's Day weekend. Shout out to all the mamas. We've heard seen some nice tweets and some Twitch comments. Of course, you can text in the show. So 713-780-3776. Happy Mother's Day to all. And you heard that that home run, grand slam by Alembis Diaz. He said he did it for his mama and his wife. Here's Alembis Diaz on Mother's Day.
Alembis Diaz.
Oh, it was great, you know, especially on this day, you know, like all the moms, you know, the team, and especially my mom, my sister, and my wife, you know, so a lot of emotion in that swing.
Were any of them here today?
Just my wife, you know, but I just texted my mom, and she's very happy. Say, like, I hit that one for her, so I'm proud of that.
You know,
so sweet.
Fun fact, Vanessa, I don't know if you knew about this, but did you know, just like that stat that you brought up, this isn't maybe quite as impressive, but did you know that everyone in Major League Baseball history
has had a mother?
Wow.
I'm breaking ground here. That's every single player has had a mother.
Here's the problem. You start talking and I'm like, wow, he's about to say something serious.
Well, I did. Every single player in baseball history has had a mother. You know, there's no replicants out there yet that we know of. All moms. No robots. Nope. No lab babies yet. Someday they'll be great baseball players, I'm sure. But moms, every single baseball player has had
moms. Moms are undefeated. Shout out to my mom, Tracy, and your mom, right?
Yeah, Kitsy. Hell yeah.
So sweet. We love mamas and we appreciate all that you do. So BetMGM and the Astros sent an email about an hour ago, 2 hours ago, that I thought was really interesting. BetMGM, a leading sports betting and iGaming operator, today announced that the company now is the exclusive sports betting partner of the Houston Astros. And here's where it's interesting to me, Pauly G. This marks BetMGM's first relationship in Texas.
Yes.
I mean, my bad. Baseball, you know, listen, we can't have gambling in Texas. Wink, wink, wink.
Right.
All right, all the feds gone? Okay. Look, good. This needs to be a thing. I don't understand the holdup anywhere as far as keeping sports gambling illegal. People are going to find a way to do it if they don't already. You know, they will always find a way to do it. You may as well make some money off of it.
The other thing that when you see the headlines of how much money this industry is making, this is a headline and an article from ESPN. The most heavily bet Kentucky Derby ever was won by the biggest long shot in the field. We just talked about that, of course. A record $179 million was bet on Saturday's Kentucky Derby, a 17% increase over the last year and 8% greater than the previous record set in 2019. I mean, when you take inventory of where this industry is at, it reminds me of fantasy football 15 years ago where people said it'll just be a trend. It'll just be here and gone. Sports betting is here to stay. The Astros really only gave kind of a short, politically correct statement saying we're looking forward to our partnership with BetMGM as we continue to strive for new ways to add to the fan experience. This partnership will provide another way for Astros to engage with our fans.
I mean, this is a way to get more people to go to the games. If say you could do this at the ballpark as opposed to other places too. I don't know. Maybe people are going to come there. I get the idea that, all right, the more gambling that's allowed, the more the possibility is for some absolutely horrible 1919 Chicago Black Sox or Pete Rose kind of scandal potentially invading baseball in some way, shape, or form. But I think the reality is, as you mentioned just a moment ago, they are making tons of money off of this. Why not have, you know, local entities make some of that money, wet their beak a little bit off the top, keeping all of this stuff legal? And personally, well, I have no problem with driving all the way out to Lake Charles to go to the Golden Nugget or the Barstool Sportsbook or any of the stuff out there. I would like to not have to drive 2.5 hours to do something like that, to put a wager on some sort of athletic event. Everyone does it. It's one of those things where the reasons that it's not potentially a thing, like I'm trying to think of what the real obstacle is. So if a baseball team is making a partnership, that's almost like an open, hey, let's speed things up. A baseball team, the most backward sport, they're partnering up.
There are so many moments in NFL broadcasts before it was popular and before it was acceptable where broadcasters would fit in a little, you know, side note about gambling, whether it was a certain parlay that it hit or if somebody had bet like the over under. It's so open now. There's no reason for this to be even controversial. And shout out to MGM, of course, and the Houston Astros for making this happen. I think it's going to be fun.
We would love to be a part of it. You know,
investors,
possibly Vanessa and Gallant radio program.
We love gambling, wagering, whatever term you want to use.
I mean, coming up, we smile upon it until it's legal.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, a possible spot for Baker Mayfield. People are mentioning here in Houston. What would you think? And should the Browns just cut Baker Mayfield and be done with it? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Ian Rappaport tweeting that Richard Sherman is deep in talks with Amazon for a key role in their programming this coming season. Rappaport says Sherman will stay in shape for a possible NFL opportunity, but as of now, all eyes on the broadcasting future.
He should be on a studio show now. He was the person that I thought should be the color commentator for Monday Night Football when it was uncertain what the hell they were going to do next. I would assume that that means that he is probably a prohibitive favorite to do the games with Al Michaels on Amazon. I would
Man, that'd be awesome.
I would think that would be a pretty good pairing. And I would just hope, too, that Richard Sherman, who is still part of the league, I would just hope that he is his old school, unfiltered self. He's been doing podcasts and things like that. I think he's tremendously talented as far as broadcaster capabilities. I mean, I feel like it's the NFL's version of Draymond Green, even if maybe he doesn't have quite the same clout that he did 5 years ago, 4 years ago. It's still the Richard Sherman. It was weird last year, Vanessa. I was actually on the radio in Seattle when it was found out that he was booked for a DUI. And I remember like finding out all the details. Someone texted into our show about that he had been arrested. And I decided, because I didn't want to get in trouble for potentially reporting it, so I just tweeted some of, like, texted some of my reporter friends, and I was like, hey, I see Richard Sherman's police report, so do you want to report this for me so I can talk about it on the air? So I texted them that, and then they reported it, and I talked about it on the air, because we had this weird thing. I didn't feel comfortable, like, potentially stepping on the Seahawks' toes or anything like that. And that, if you watch the videos of it and you hear the phone call, it was really messed up. So he was going through a lot of things no excuse for what he did.
Right.
But so I wonder if that is something that would potentially keep him from being in too high profile a role. But I think that would be smart by Amazon just from the X's and O's broadcasting standpoint. The guy would be damn good.
Absolutely. When you and I talked about our dream announcer rotations, because all the movement in the offseason between Al Michaels, Mike Tirico, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, you and I both had mentioned that he would be so good in a booth or a studio. So I'm excited to see where he lands. I'm excited to see where Sean Payton lands, because he's said to be in talks with Fox for a studio role. I think it'll be interesting. Moving on to other NFL news. The Mills Mafia movement continues to gain momentum. Davis Mills, you could say, surprised some people for a third rounder with how he performed, won four games. Hey, the same amount of Deshaun Watson the year before that. Kyle Van Noy was on the Pat McAfee show and talked about being impressed with Davis Mills, the Stanford grad.
I will say, speaking of Mac, I also want people to also think about David Mills for just one second.
Yes.
And I know everyone's like, what?
Dougie!
I want you to look at his play of his rookie year and his completions and touchdown ratio to Mac Jones. Very similar. And I don't think people have hit on that enough, of the progress David Mills has shown down in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, other than the fact that he kept calling him David, I think I understood the sentiment.
Always a good sign when your quarterback is being called by the wrong name, just how good he is and how much potential he has. It is a weird first name. It's a last name.
Davis, yeah.
He has two last names as his names. Look, I still am going to say probably not, but I am, like Kyle Van Noy, at the very least willing to allow it to happen without saying no definitively beforehand. I just don't think it will. And I am really wondering what is the likelihood that he would be the starting quarterback for you for the entirety of this coming season. I think that we could potentially see the guy get benched. And what happens then? Well, you're in a pretty good spot if you end up doing that, seeing as you have a bunch of first-round picks in the future. I wonder, though. I don't think it is as far away from 50-50 that he would be able to finish the first season going into an offseason where he is definitively the starter. I don't know that he necessarily finishes the year out as that guy. The good thing for him is there's not a lot of competition. So
there really isn't, and you can tell that administration and Lovie Smith and the front office certainly believes in him a lot, as was indicated when they sat Tyrod Taylor for him and let Davis Mills finish the season. Meanwhile, Mary Kay Cabot, one of the lead journalists in the Cleveland area, she writes for Cleveland.com. She released an article over the weekend talking about how the Browns just need to trade Baker Mayfield. A Panthers trade. Pro Football Talk this morning saying the Browns should just outright cut Baker Mayfield and be done with it because of the distraction in the locker room that it brings. What are your thoughts on that? And should the Texans be looking at Baker Mayfield as a possible addition to that quarterback room?
Only if they can get some draft pick compensation with it. I see no reason to bring in Baker Mayfield as a free agent because that could potentially undermine any confidence Davis Mills might have coming from last year into next year. But if the Browns are going to say, look, we will trade a second or a third round pick or something like that, and you get Baker Mayfield for 1 year and you just eat the salary, I'd imagine the Texans would have to eat some of the salary. That would be the only reason that the Browns would offer a draft pick along with it. Maybe not all of it. Then that's the reason to do it. But if you are not getting a draft pick in addition to Baker Mayfield, that is, I think, perhaps poisoning the well. And I'm not even speaking from just a Baker Mayfield perspective, but you bring in Baker Mayfield, he will expect to be the starter. And I would imagine that there will be a lot of players in the Texans locker room that will not accept him because they feel like Davis Mills earned the job for this coming season. If you want to keep continuity going, that is like the equivalent of just farting all over your continuity by bringing in Baker.
Absolutely. When you look at the quarterback room now, I mean, who would the backup be if Davis Mills were to get hurt? Jeff Driscoll? No offense to Jeff Driscoll.
He's a tight end.
He was playing tight end last year.
Yeah.
Something that I think we need to...
Gator legend.
Right. Yeah. Chomp. Family. A new SI story dropped. It wasn't anything new. It was essentially a reactionary piece. Nothing worth reading on air, but it's more of a, here's how some women in Cleveland reacted when Deshaun Watson was traded to Cleveland. And those stories, of course, are always worth listening to. No new legal revelations is what I'm saying. You and I talked about this before the show, because every time a Deshaun Watson article is released or it trends on Twitter, it kind of restarts the discussion of how is the NFL going to handle this. I thought you brought up a really interesting question, Paul, when we were prepping for the show, which was, how are the broadcasters going to handle once Deshaun Watson comes back from what we assume will be a suspension? How are the broadcasters going to handle this? I think each broadcast team, I mean, I'll give you my prediction real quick and then you can give me yours, is that it's going to be different. I think that Troy and Joe will have no problem facing this head on. They've had no issue in the past talking about players that have been accused of domestic violence. I think Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth are going to be possibly incredibly awkward when they talk about it. It's Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, I don't know that they even mention it. And then we don't even know who's going to be with Kevin Burkhardt yet. And we haven't heard Kevin Burkhardt in that number one spot. So it's probably not fair to say.
I forgot about Herbstreit being on with Al Michaels too.
Yeah.
I would prefer Richard Sherman. I'm sorry. Like Herbstreit, Herbstreit does not belong in the NFL. And I will continue to be territorial on that front. No, you're a college football guy. Your expertise is in college football. Nothing wrong with that, but stick to college football. But I forgot about that because I know that kind of goes back to the last conversation that we had. As far as how it goes, I think you are right in that no one wants to talk about the explicit details of it. They don't. But it's a huge thing.
It is.
I mean, and I think, you know, going back, I guess you could probably go back in time and watch whatever Ben Roethlisberger, however he was described in his first game back from that, six-game suspension that he had way back in the day, there was probably a passing mention of it. But I think that the NFL would be very much in the ears of their broadcasters and say, hey, you can't go into too much with this. This is something that we want to move on from. I think they would say the same thing for anything that would involve maybe Daniel Snyder. Or, I guess, the most recent allegations against an NFL owner. Because now the Raiders president got fired, I guess, over the weekend, and he's alleging that Mark Davis had been the subject of many complaints in the Raiders organization. So they are not going to want to touch it. There is only one person, I think, and I actually disagree with you on this one. Al Michaels will 100% mention it. Because Al Michaels does not care anymore.
That's a good point, especially where he's at in his career.
Yeah. What are they going to do to Al Michaels? He's Al bleeping Michaels. He's also on Amazon right now, maybe it would be a little bit more of a frosty relationship between the Amazon network and the NFL if he just does whatever he wants. But he's Al Michaels. He mentions gambling in the midst of the broadcast and has been doing that for a while in a subtle, cutesy kind of way, the same way that you were seeing from on ESPN Brent Musburger for such a long period of time. You know, I think he's the one that would likely touch it. Mike Tirico will not touch it at all. Mike Tirico has no idea how to handle controversy. That's for sure.
No, and Mike Tirico has shown in the past that he definitely prefers to steer clear of it. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk about the Seahawks, Paul's former mistress team. Do they have the worst quarterback room? And which rookie quarterback is going to make the biggest leap in year two, Paul?
It's good questions. But first, I got to tell you about my friends at the Passive Investor Network. And look, guys, I am someone who is starting to learn about investing in things. And investing in real estate seems like a really smart thing to do these days, right? With the way that the housing prices are going up. But the problem is, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And that's why my friends at Passive Investor Network, passiveinvestor.net, that's where they come in. So they create a personalized 5-year plan for you and real estate investments that's based off of your financial goals. You get to sit down with one of these great portfolio advisors, and they have a 5-year plan. It's really awesome. They do the work for you. You can be hands-on if you want, but isn't it even better in a world where we've all got so many different things to do to have these guys take care of it themselves? And what they do also is do a bus tour, and it's coming up on May 21st. So if you go to passiveinvestor.net, you enter promo code ESPN, you'll be able to go on this bus tour for free. And essentially, they donate to a charity because of these bus tours, but they will show you what you can do with a real estate property over a period of a couple of years. They'll show you how things look at first. They'll show you how things look like a couple of years down the road, 5 years down the road. These guys are great. Passiveinvestor.net. Again, sign up through their website using promo code ESPN. You meet with their professionals, and they're going to show you how they could take this all out of your hands and give you some serious, serious cheddar for down the road. So you want to go hang out with them. Again, the bus tour is on May 21st. Passive Investor Network, passiveinvestor.net, passiveinvestor.net. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it's the team that Paul Gallant covered so closely for a few years there in Seattle, and you could argue that they may have the worst quarterback room. Drew Locke, Jacob Eason, and Geno Smith. Not great,
awful.
Bob.
That is awful. Drew Locke has only looked good once against the Houston Texans.
He's entering his third year, correct?
Yes, he is. Yes.
So Pete Carroll says to PFF, this is on PFF, but he said it to KJR93.3, quote, "I think Drew Locke would have been the first quarterback picked in this draft." Now, you've talked, Paul, because this made its waves. This went viral. You've talked about Pete Carroll kind of saying things just to say things.
It does feel like that from time to time.
Is that happening here, or does he really believe that?
Well, I will say this. The guy is, as he even has described to me, fatally optimistic. So, of course, he is going to gas up his players. He never, ever, ever talks trash about anyone. And he had all the reason in the world to do it with Russell Wilson. So he's gassing him up. But this gas ain't getting you very far. You are putting some ethanol or some rubbing alcohol on the side of your car, and you're hoping that something happens with Drew Locke under center. And it's funny to hear him say that. I mean, I guess it makes you maybe feel a little bit better about the consensus opinion about the quarterbacks in this year's draft class and about what the Texans did not do.
Right.
But, I mean, Drew Locke, Geno Smith, and Jacob Eason going into the year. Just woof. I mean,
when you look at the moves that were made, it certainly seems like they didn't care to load up.
No. I mean, and then they had an opportunity to draft some of those guys. They had two picks in the second round at 40 and 41, and all Seahawks fans lost their minds because they drafted a running back with the second pick. And Seahawks fans, especially the online
analytically driven ones think that running backs don't matter anymore. So they all
I thought Mina Kimes was going to have a stroke.
Yeah.
She's a big Seahawks fan and analytics fan.
They all hate it when they draft running backs because they've done it a lot. They drafted one in the first round a couple of years ago, Rashad Penny, who has actually been pretty good. He has a career 6 yards per carry, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. But, you know, you look at that room, and I mean, at the very least, the Texans have a better quarterback room than that. And with just Davis Mills, hey, there's upside there. And I don't know if you saw this afternoon, Vanessa, or this morning, but I guess Cal McNair came out of the McNair cave to speak with the media about the Houston Texans. And look, he's feeling that there's some positive vibes. There's some excitement going into the
season. Really?
Yeah, here's Cal McNair.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's normal to have it sort of the business cycle in the sports. And you have your ups and downs and you fight your way through it. And we've always had the fans with us. And it's exciting to have even more excitement than we've had the last couple years due to whatever reasons. We've had a lot of different things impact us, attendance at the stadium and different things. And so we're excited to get everything back together and going again. So it's going to be a fun year.
There's a lot of things to dissect there. We've gone through a lot of things. Oh, you don't say, Cal.
Right.
The interesting part, Vanessa, hearing him there say that there's a lot more excitement than in previous years. Well, I would hope so, because I don't think there has been any. And saying that the fans have always been with us, I don't think that there is any fan base, even with the Texans finishing the season last year the way that they did, which I did think was a positive step forward. I don't think there could be more disinterest in this team. And even with this past draft that they just had, it's just hard to sell people on Davis Mills, even if Mills did have some good moments last year.
I mean, Davis Mills won just as many games as Deshaun Watson did his last year. I'm not saying that they're the same player, okay? I'm not saying that Deshaun Watson is bad. I think he's going to do a good job in Cleveland. I'm just stating a fact. So I know that Texans fans have not been interested. You look at the fact that this is one of the expansion teams. It's one of the newest teams anyway.
Still,
it's also in a city that's the most diverse city in America. So you have so many fans here from the Saints, the Cowboys. You have people that move here from random areas. So this was bound to happen anyway, where when the Texans go through a bad period of time, you see that the fan base is disinterested. I will give the Texans credit in this regard. Lovie Smith has talked about it openly. He talked about it at his introductory press conference. Greg Grissom, the team president, has talked about it. They know that they have rocked the boat with fans and that it has not been a good thing.
But you hear that from Cal. I don't know if I get that vibe that it's the entire organization, Vanessa, is feeling that way, you know? He starts it off by saying, you know, you have some downs and you have some highs. Well, this is for an organization that I don't think has had many just rock bottom downs. Like, you hit rock bottom. You can't just look at it as, oh, well, this is just natural. This just happens. No, this happens to Detroit. This happens to the Jets. You know, this though, you can't just dismiss it. And I'm glad that, as you mentioned, that Grissom and that Lovie Smith have acknowledged it. But Cal has to acknowledge it more than that.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, so you think that he kind of still has the rose-colored glasses on.
I'm Frank Drebin in The Naked Gun standing in front of a fireworks factory that's blowing up and saying, nothing to see here, please disperse. No, you're dismissing it a little bit too much. We went through some things. Your quarterback was under investigation for
22 civil, yeah.
And that was after he demanded a trade. Also, your head coach traded away one of your best players for like $5 and an ice cream cone. And David Johnson, too. My bad. Forgot about that. J.J. Watt was like, please let me leave. Whitney Merciless, your release killing Merciless. Your release. how do I say it? Your mercy releasing Whitney Merciless so that he could go chase a championship. Whitney Merciless. Like, guys like him, like a player that's like a good 10-year veteran, but like, you're doing solids for everybody because you've lost so much goodwill. You can't be that dismissive of it. That to me, come on, dude. Like, you know that this is an absolute train wreck. If you actually acknowledge and start being honest,
some people will appreciate you for that, as opposed to thinking like, hey, you took over and things have gotten worse ever since you took over. Unfair or fair, that is the perception that is of Cal McNair right now. And you can't just say like, well, yeah, all teams go through this. This is historic what they have gone through the last 2 years.
It also is indicative of the fact that Cal McNair is the guy that still needs the press release and the PR talk with the bullet points before he goes in front of any media members, because we don't see him that often. And sometimes things like this indicate why. I think, look, I'm not going to, it's much ado about nothing, right? But some people could misconstrue that as him saying we've been through some things is a little insensitive because of what exactly Deshaun Watson was accused of. Davis Mills, meanwhile, as we have talked about, entering year two, there was that quarterback draft class. It was known to be a little bit better than this one, and that's saying something. Trevor Lawrence, of course, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance. Paul, who do you look to be the person out of that quarterback class heading into their second year that you think will see the biggest growth?
Well, obviously, I want it to be Mac Jones because, yeah, I don't need to go any further than that, but as far as the guys who's going to make the biggest year two jump, I mean, it would make a lot of sense to say Trey Lance because you didn't see him at all last year. And you would think, okay, now this guy who was supposedly as unpro ready as he was, he's got all sorts of unbelievable tools we hear about. Kyle Shanahan, I think, has done a hell of a job with all sorts of quarterbacks, ranging from Jimmy Garoppolo to Robert Griffin III to Matt Schaub. Like, Matt Ryan's best ever career year. I feel like if I were a betting man, I think that you would have the longest odds with Trey Lance, and I feel like he's got the best situation of all of those guys that you mentioned. Justin Fields is one where I just feel like Chicago, you're just kind of screwed there.
It was so bad that it may be him by default if they can just win a couple of games. But for me, I'm really excited to see what Trevor Lawrence can do. I mean, this was the guy that I know you do, but now that he has
Clemson.
Doug Peterson, now that he has the, you know, somebody that's won a Super Bowl and he is a competent head coach, I'm hoping that he can grow. I think that'll make the AFC South more exciting. I mean, right now, it is the Jags, the Texans, and then you got Ryan Tannehill, and then maybe Matt Ryan can have a second win now that he's surrounded by some good players. I would love to see Trevor Lawrence make that leap.
Well, I would like the Jaguars to be, yes, a little bit more competent, but I would much more, God, I'm struggling with words.
It's
this
okay.
Segment, huh?
Words are hard.
Merciless mercying of the mercy. It sounds like a Catholic school when I was saying that earlier. I want Trevor Lawrence to fall flat on his face, and it has nothing to do with Trevor Lawrence. It has nothing to do with even the Jaguars. I just hate Clemson football fans, and yeah. I want everyone from that cult. I want them all to suffer. That is a cult, you know? I make fun of the Aggies, but at least the Aggies are, like, cool to hang out with, you know?
Aggies know how to have fun and make fun of their losses and misery.
Clemson, you, like, get forced to be baptized to play football for Clemson. Like, it's just really weird, like, what goes on up there. And, yeah, sorry, I want Trevor Lawrence to fail because of Dabo Swinney. That's entirely it. Dabo Swinney annoys me. He creeps me out. I don't know. He just makes me uncomfortable. So, yeah, more than anything, yeah, I want Clemson football to suffer NFL-wise.
Fair enough. Coming
really
up on Vanessa.
Reason.
Yeah, fair enough. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Is the Kentucky Derby a reason to expand the college football playoff? Plus, our garbage time segment. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, the Kentucky Derby with Rich Strike winning in a historical race after having like 80-1 odds. It was absolutely insane.
Congrats on the future sex, Rich Strike.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be getting laid in the stable.
Yep, stud season. You don't ever race him again, right? Or do you try to win the Triple Crown? Because the odds of him winning again, I don't know much about horse racing, Vanessa. I would imagine they're very low. If you owned Rich Strike, I think especially seeing how crazy the horse was afterwards, you might want to just try to get as much money as you possibly can. A lot of bangs for your buck, if you will.
One and done, baby. Mike Leach, one of the most eccentric personalities in college football coaching, used this as a way to push his agenda. He says on Twitter, "That horse winning the Kentucky Derby today is a good example of why an expanded college football playoff is needed. That horse hadn't won all the races leading up, but it got its chance, and that's what happened."
I love it.
Love it.
Just shoehorning something that's completely unrelated in. We're talking about a field of, what, 20 horses? 21 horses? I'm not even sure how many horses race at the Kentucky Derby. And that one won. How often does that happen? Very rarely. More often than not, you're going to see Cincinnati, which may have made it worse for some of those non-Power 5 schools to get into a college football playoff or to expand a playoff, them showing up and just getting absolutely bodied. Like, that was what you expected to happen. It's just different in college football. And, you know, in college basketball, too, Vanessa, at the very least in the NCAA tournament, yeah, you could have something like that happen with Rich Strike in the NCAA tournament. This doesn't happen in college football. The best programs in college football are so far ahead of everybody. It would take a miraculous kind of upset to win. What non-Power 5 school would you ever in your right mind take to beat Alabama? Who?
I mean, the only one that people talked about was University of Cincinnati. Obviously, that didn't happen. But to your point, UC beating Notre Dame and then getting into that Final Four was like such a big upset in and of itself.
Yeah.
And then they had to play. Yeah. I mean, then they had to take the path that was hard and they were not able to reach the final game.
They got in. It's cool. I don't like the idea of expanding the college football playoff, though, Vanessa. I feel like we have already turned bowl season into a complete waste of time. It's not the college football playoff, you know, and at least I get that. You know, it's all about what makes you money. And, you know, people are going to watch the national championship. People are going to watch those games that lead up to it. But all of a sudden, we've turned the Rose Bowl into an afterthought, a game that mattered a great deal to people. And if college football is something that's going to stick to some of the history and tradition that does make it stand apart from the NFL, then just continuing to expand the college football playoff, I don't know. I'm kind of of the belief that the BCS might have had it right, you know?
I do respect anybody that puts their name on an opinion and can draw up a fun metaphor, and that is Mike Leach summed up. All right, it is time for our Garbage Time segment.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
All right, we touched on this in an earlier segment, but Ian Rappaport tweeting that Richard Sherman is deep in talks with Amazon for a key role in their programming. He'll stay in shape for a possible NFL opportunity, but as of now, all eyes on his broadcasting future. I love this. I would love to see Richard Sherman in a booth or studio.
I would too. I think to a couple of texters and Twitchers points over the course of this morning, it is kind of bogus that someone like Richard Sherman could theoretically get a second chance to do this, given what took place just a year ago, one of the worst nights of his life, which could have been a lot worse. I mean, the guy was driving drunk with a car and drove it into a construction site where there were actually people on site. He's really lucky no one got hurt. I don't know how the actual DUI charge never became a thing after that. Like, that 100% should have happened.
Yeah, it was like domestic violence-ish, but he didn't hit his wife. It was him, like, trying to break down his in-laws' doors or something like that. But, yeah, to your point, I mean, not a good night.
He drank a ton of alcohol and got behind the wheel of a car. Like, before he even got there, he could have killed somebody. So, I got to say, from the broadcasting perspective, I think it'll work out. But, you know, it's one of those things where famous people get lots of second chances. Rich people get lots of second chances. And the NFL, talent trumps all, always.
Whether Urban Meyer may get another shot at the broadcast booth.
Oh, God.
That would cause a lot of controversy.
Is he coming back?
There's been rumors. There's been a lot of rumors. I don't think anybody would want to hear him, especially since his whole shtick was the family man that can build a good culture and a good team. Meanwhile, a Florida World War II veteran nurse celebrated her 100th birthday by jumping out of a plane.
It's amazing. I just like that Florida stays on brand. 100-year-old Florida lady jumps out of a plane. You could not get me to jump out of a plane ever. Nope. No. No way. No how. Unless you pay me money.
You know, the problem with it, Paul, is that yours would be the one that, like, where the parachute broke.
Thanks for putting that energy out there.
No, I just feel like, you know, like your luck would be that you would finally go for it and that would happen.
That's what goes through my head, though, which means that it's probably unlikely to happen. Well, that's why I don't go on roller coasters because I watched Final Destination 3.
You really don't do roller coasters?
They scare the hell out of me.
Oh, I love a good roller coaster. Mm. Shout out to Kings Island in Mason, Ohio.
The only way that I could go is if I were there with an attractive woman that I was on a date with, and if she wanted to go on it, I would just act like I'm not going to hate my life for the next like hour as I wait in line anxiously for the actual
Paul
roller coaster
ends up
to start.
Vomiting on this hot blonde that goes to Arizona State.
She could be a brunette. Could be any color hair. I was trying on Vanessa on Saturday night to watch the Canelo fight. And
yeah.
So I ended up going with a friend to Little Woodrow's in White Oak. And I guess they didn't have it on. So there was some other fighting thing that was taking place. I'm 100% sure what it was. I'll be honest. I'm totally clueless when it comes to fighting. All I know is that this interview that took place after a UFC fight over the weekend is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Last fight, I was tired. I was exhausted. I'm about to launch this NFT that's going to change the fight game. And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight. I had herpes before that fight, 2 outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
I mean, there's just a lot going on there. The world-changing NFT.
An outbreak of herpes?
Twice in a week.
Okay, so
I guess that happens.
Hashtag blessed, because I don't even really know how STDs work. I thought once you got herpes, you couldn't get it again. So you can get it twice?
So from what I know from health class in high school, Vanessa, is that you know what? I actually don't know a damn thing
about
this.
Maybe it's syphilis is the one that once you get it, you have it for forever. Or
No, you're right about herpes is the one that you have forever. But it's like breakouts, I guess. So,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It can dormant for a while. And
right,
then it
Sean.
Flares up.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they all like that? I don't even know.
I don't know.
God bless him. Wow.
He's very open about it. He's trying to normalize having herpes.
And he really buried the lead with the NFT. Yeah. Now everyone's talking about his herpes. I want to see this NFT that's changing the fight game.
Yeah, you got to say the first part, the last part first, and the NFT last.
So what's funny is when I first listened to this sound that you sent, that's what I thought you were talking about, because I didn't hear the herpes part.
I don't even know who that guy was.
I was like, okay, Paul, like it's not that big of a deal that a fighter starts an NFT. And then I listened to it again, and I heard that our friend has 2 outbreaks of herpes. Wow.
I mean.
good for him. Live your truth. Meanwhile, a former Arizona sheriff's deputy has been arrested for allegedly crashing weddings and stealing newlyweds' gifts. This brings me back to Wedding Crashers being the best comedy of the last 20 years.
He thought he was going to get away with it, too. He was a cop. He was above the law. Being a cop wedding crasher, that's probably the best way to go be a wedding crasher.
His name is Landon Rankin. He would allegedly pose as a guest and steal boxes of wedding cards. The boxes at the Phoenix area weddings both contained between $3,000 and $6,000.
Oh,
11
damn.
Similar thefts. This guy needs to hang out with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. He was a true wedding crasher.
That's ballsy, taking cards. Makes sense. I was wondering if he was just taking gifts, because you could steal a gift very easily, I would imagine,
yeah.
And the gift would turn out to be like, oh God, I stole a vacuum cleaner, or oh, I stole a blender, or oh, I stole a spatula, or something else that was bought
by
someone.
He told police after he was arrested that he attended the weddings to hear the vows, quote, because he was going through a divorce.
Oh, must be going through an alimony too if he's stealing all this cash.
All right, that's been another episode of Monday edition of Vanessa and Gallant. I'm Vanessa Richardson. He's Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass for us. You got Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham up next with the Killer Bees from 12 to 3. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.